This is Vibrant Spaces, a show about placemaking, activating, and connecting city spaces for the communities you serve. Welcome back to another season of Vibrant Spaces. We are so excited that you have come back and joined us again for another season of wonderful guests who are speaking about vibrancy, placemaking, and building awesome things in their city that really support their community, their tourism, all of those wonderful things that make cities the places that we want to live. It's taken us a little bit longer to get this season out than we thought we would because, you know, shit's been wild.
Yeah. You know, Em, I think as the resident American, I'll just own this and we're going to talk about it. So the populace voted and we received a new regime, and that new administration has chosen to cut a lot of the funding of the cities we have been interviewing. And so that has caused a lot of, you know, what are the actual repercussions of that? People losing jobs, changing jobs, seeking new economic opportunities for long-term sustainability for themselves. People moved around. So some of the people this season you're going to hear no longer work in those spaces. We're going to continue to talk about them and with them as if they are still working in those spaces, because we want to capture the amazing work that they have been doing and the results of what that funding had been doing for these communities in placemaking, creating vibrancy, healing traumas, culturally, socially, bringing communities together.
Things that you can do.
Right. So we want to be able to provide this as like an archive for anybody else who's in the city and might have access to resources. And I think this episode will be really interesting because kind of in the theme of what we heard from Kansas City and Baltimore last year or last season, the city of Tulsa has done some really interesting things economically that I think will help them survive this transition. And so city of Tulsa is kind of where we will be jumping into. They have this amazing public-private partnership where local, honestly, the local wealth has chosen to reinvest itself back into the city and maintain ownership, and not just in a really interesting way, and Meg will talk about it as we get into the episode, but not just in a, hey, we bought this thing and we're giving it to you, but we bought this thing, we're maintaining this thing, we're actively invested in the results that this thing is generating. And I think that's really exciting and potentially a new model for us to look at in this crazy new geopolitical environment.
Definitely. I really love this as a jumping off point for the season, because we're going to revisit this a lot in this season, which is culture as economic development. Right. And Tulsa has a really interesting way of doing that. You know, there's not many cities that you hear where they're like, we want our city to be the best storyteller it can be. And by city, they mean obviously governments and tourism, but also like the residents, the artists, the people traveling and touring. They are their best storytellers. And so they are equipping those people to be the mouthpiece that drives economic development. And it's really exciting to see, you know, what do the artists need for success and how do they build that system to be able to make those performers stand out for their own benefit and economic wealth driving and all those sorts of things. But then also, how does that then help the city at the same time? And, you know, they've cultivated, as you said, those amazing public private partnerships. And I think there's also a little bit of an acknowledgement there that, you know, artists and creators are becoming very big wealth generators as well. And they might then similarly in the future become part of this private partnership that then funds that city. And so I really love what they're doing. I'm excited for you guys to all hear about it. It brings up a whole bunch of ideas for me, Tim, about how cool it would be to take some of the things that they're doing, and rather than it just kind of putting a bunch of money into it every year to make it evergreen and leave a bunch of like breadcrumbs across the US to like bring people back into Tulsa. There's a lot of like little ideas, but we can dive into that in the outro. But I'm excited for you guys to hear it. And Tim, can you introduce the first of our two guests today?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think I'm super excited to introduce both Meg and then Em to introduce Natalie, because Meg Gould is the executive director of Tulsa Office of Film, Music, Arts, and Culture. Yes, all four of those fall underneath her purview. But she's a certified film commissioner with the Association of Film Commissioners International and has a BA in radio, television, and film production. She embarked on her career in Los Angeles and then moved to Dallas and then eventually to Tulsa. So she's been around the block a bit. In Los Angeles, she was able to work on super cool projects ranging from big budget films like Godzilla to like prestigious events such as the Academy Awards and the World Cup, which again will be coming back to the States here soon. So that's pretty exciting. After returning to Dallas, she got to work on Walker, Texas Ranger, and she made career moving, changing things that happened in the Dallas Film Commission and helping it evolve into a film and creative industries office. It connected to that Visit Dallas. So when you go to Dallas and you engage in any kind of film tourism, Meg's fingerprints have definitely been on it. That being said, she then left that cool legacy that she built to build a new one as the director of the Office of Film, Culture, Arts, and Music in Tulsa, where she's now working to kind of create a hub and spokes model to drive people out and back in to the city of Tulsa, leveraging all of that cool creation that they
did. So you can say that she's done this a couple of times where she's taken, you know, arts and culture underneath mm-hmm. the banner of tourism, all except she's kind of taken it a step further in Tulsa, where she's put it now, where it's now also under the banner of Chamber of Commerce, under the banner of economic development. So she's like, every city she's moving to, she's stepping it up. So I think that Tulsa has claimed her and doesn't want to let her go, but.
You know, she did say she kept her eye on Tulsa for a while. So I feel like it's kind of maybe like one of those pirate maps with the X marks the spot. I think for Meg, this might be the X.
100%, yeah. And so our second guest today is also Natalie Bowling. And so she is the manager of Tulsa's Office of Film, Music, Arts, and Culture. She is a University of Tulsa alumni, so she hails from Tulsa. She holds degrees in marketing and arts and culture and entertainment management. And during her studies, she gained a lot of hands-on experience in areas like audio engineer and lighting design across various sectors of the music industry. So she's super steeped into artist management companies, record labels, and top talent agency, CAA, which was formerly, you know, ICM. And so since joining Tulsa in 2021, Natalie has been really instrumental in developing funding and advocacy initiatives. And so you'll hear about several of those in this interview, which includes Tulsa on Tour, Play Tulsa Music Live, Creative Content Programs, and Tulsa Music Month, which happens in July every year. Welcome to Tulsa Music Month, everyone.
Yeah. And speaking of that little promotion of Tulsa, this episode might sound a little bit more promotional. And that, I think, just speaks to the passion that Natalie and Meg have put into their projects. They want everybody to know about them. And so we recognize that lens exists, and we just wanted to name it as we jump into this amazing conversation with these two ladies. But it may sound a little bit like come move to Tulsa because they want everybody to do what they've done.
They do. They do. We tried to keep them on track with, you know, numbers and specifics and all of those kind of things. But you can't stop people who are desperately passionate about their city spruiking their city. So
with that, let us jump into the episode and we'll see you guys on the other side.
Ciao.
Meg and Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today on our Vibrant Spaces podcast. I am super excited to jump into this conversation of what is happening in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I think it's incredibly interesting. I was super impressed with everything that you guys were showcasing down at South by Southwest, which has kind of led us to our conversation today. So before and as we get started, I think I just would love to get a couple of, you know, off the cuff questions to both of you. So Natalie, let's start with you. You grew up in the city of Tulsa and in its communities. Like, what has been the biggest change that you've witnessed in your community, you know, then versus now, as you've watched the city transform?
Yeah, I think there are kind of two parts to the answer of that question. One, my perspective changed a ton whenever I just grew up in Tulsa, and really found myself as an adult in Tulsa instead of a child in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I lived in a suburb of Tulsa called Broken Arrow. And whenever I was in Broken Arrow, I was very familiar with the music scene that was happening in Tulsa and the different cool things you could do. But I wasn't as engaged in the history of that music scene and as understanding of how unique Tulsa was set apart to several other cities and really how Tulsa had its own story. And that not every other place in America was like Tulsa, Oklahoma, in a sense where it really took care of their artists and really had live music every night of the week and had so many different unique punk scenes and just weird house shows. And I was really fortunate to be a part of those different things growing up. But one of the things that I'm proud of that's certainly different now is my uncle is a musician, and he's now based in Tulsa. And he grew up here, moved to Nashville for quite a few years, came back. But before he had moved to Nashville, that first town, whenever like a plumber went to his house, asked, "What do you do for a living?" And he would say musician. The worker like had no idea that that was actually a real thing and a real occupation you could do based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Uh-huh. And so kind of laughed it off and left. But now he's back, and we're continuing to see several full-time musicians in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we can compare that story as just a way that the community has really been growing and the workforce has been growing in these artist industries. And that has a lot to do with what downtown looks like, the different things that you can do now, the way the city's growing. So I'm really proud that we're going in that direction.
That is so cool. Like, I mean, first off, I'm a little jealous that you grew up in such like an indie art scene that I didn't really have that coming up. And the idea that you've been able to see even in your family the impact of the work that you guys have been doing in the city is super awesome. Meg, you were originally from Tulsa, but you came into Tulsa and joined this bandwagon of really cool things that are going on there. What has been one of your, what is one of the most special places that you have like discovered in the city, and why is that space so special to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been here for a year and a half, and I keep finding my favorite spots. It's unbelievable what this town has to offer and the pride that it has in it. I think that one of my very favorite places is one of our large city parks. It's called The Gathering Place. Okay. It's very unique. Very family friendly. Occasionally you can take your dogs. There's certain days that you can. I have a dog, so I like that. There's walking paths that goes through it. You know, there's everything from basketball courts to playground equipment for 1 to 3 year olds. And then there's other area for the older kids and everything. So it is just amazing. And honestly, every time I have somebody come visit me, that's one of the first places I go. It's so peaceful. It has even an area that you can go and work remotely if you're able to do that. So it's just a very peaceful setting and just reminds you of what a special place Tulsa is.
That's so cool. And I guess that really works hand in hand with the Tulsa's remote work, come here and call this place mm-hmm. home. Mentality. That's really awesome. Okay, so for the both of you, you can both answer. One of you can jump in and answer. If you were to just throw a billboard up in the city of Tulsa, or I guess maybe on every major busy street corner in the world, what message would you want to leave legacy-wise for people to see?
I guess, I mean, is it personally or for our city? I mean, I have two answers for that.
Well, go with both. I'd love to maybe hear the personal one and then do one that's with the pride of the city of Tulsa.
Okay, well, so personally, my legacy, I guess one of the things that I'm the proudest of outside of work is that I'm an aunt and I love all my nieces and nephews and I do everything I possibly can. So I just want to be known as the favorite aunt. So I guess my legacy will be Meg was our favorite aunt. We love Aunt Meg. As far as like talking about Tulsa, I just want it to be known as a creative hub. We have, you know, it should be shouted from all the buildings in downtown Tulsa and be put on top of all the roofs that Tulsa is your creative hub for film, music, arts, and culture.
I love that. Natalie, would you have anything to add on top of that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any catchy catchphrase that I could stamp on there and approve it right this second. However, something in regards to believing in yourself and knowing that the city will believe in you too. That is one of the major reasons I stayed in Tulsa is because I continue to find myself at a young age being in a spot where I can be influential with things that I would never imagine, like city policy and governance, and really just impact the lives of different creatives, from people that have just picked up a guitar or to people that have been playing at the same venue for 30 years in Tulsa. So it's really unique to be able to come here and find your niche and find what you believe in and figure out who can also support that cause and get it started.
First off, that's freaking beautiful. I love the, you know, believe in yourself and the city will believe in you too.
I love that too. Good job, Natalie. Good job. It's so true.
You did call me a phrase. Nicely done.
The moment I stepped foot in this town, people have believed in me and given me support. It's unbelievable what this town does for each other.
Oh, and I think that I've gotten that vibe from talking to you guys and, you know, seeing some of the amazing work that you guys actually do in communicating that story of Tulsa out to the world. And I think that Meg brings up kind of the next question is that, you know, Tulsa being up and coming in so many different ways is one of those primary drivers for people to move to Tulsa is what you guys have been touching on, that arts, culture, music, and film scene that's, as Natalie, as you said, wasn't really a thing growing up, but now definitely there's traction and momentum in. Meg, can you kind of quickly give our audience a little bit of an understanding about what the placemaking, vibrancy, you know, film and music culture, arts and culture office does for the city of Tulsa and like how that's structured, how it works?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, our office is set up underneath the Tulsa Regional Chamber, as well as the Tulsa Regional Tourism Office. We have several different areas in this office, but we're primarily under tourism. So that gives us an opportunity to really promote our city and show all the things that we have to offer, whether it's film, whether it's music, whether it's arts or culture. It is just unbelievable, like the amount of support that we get from our local community in order to promote all of those things. And it's continuously changing. I can tell you, I moved here a year and a half ago. Okay. And I was just like amazed by everything Tulsa has to offer. So one of the things I think that is really cool is that we have archives from some famous musicians. We have the Woody Guthrie archives as well as Bob Dylan. So oh, wow. There's museums set aside for them here in our arts district. And it's just unbelievable what all they hold. It's pretty cool. We also have musicians like Leon Russell that had a studio here. He built all kinds of music careers here. And that studio has been refurbished and is now a museum for him, but it's also a recording studio. And it is something that we get calls about all the time, and musicians come here specifically to record in that studio. So we're just very blessed with what all we have here and what we can offer. There's so much here. I could like just keep going and keep going and keep going.
No, I love that. So I'll kind of jump in here just to help, you know, make that structure a bit transparent. So the way that you guys are set up that kind of empowers all of this amazing community building is that you're kind of underneath, you said the chamber, is that the Chamber of Commerce? Is
where Chamber of Commerce,
So the Chamber of Commerce is on top, and then you have the tourism arm.
Tourism, we had the Tulsa Regional Tourism on one side, and then we have economic development on the other. We're under the umbrella. Yeah, so then we're under the umbrella of Tulsa Regional Tourism, which also hosts the Sports Commission. We have our Visit Tulsa arm, which is marketing, and then we have our Convention and Visitors Bureau as well.
So that's really cool. And so you, I'm assuming that then based on that structure, you have a little bit of that, you know, economic development as a part of, you're trying to drive that local, using arts to drive local economic development, but at the same time, you're outreaching to the world at the same time.
Absolutely. We're looking at how we can help our local industries. So whether that's through support with economic development and building structures here, like we're looking at how do we bring a studio for filmmaking here? How do we bring in various support services for our music industry, etc.? And with the uniqueness of our office setup, we can just go across and talk to the economic development department and say, hey, what can you do? How can you help us? Who can you put us in touch with? Natalie has a great story about that as well, as far as the dome, if you wanted to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, we are, like Meg said, positioned in such a unique opportunities to be well connected with our economic development partners, whereas the economic development partners are working all day and night and fostering connections and seeking out opportunities for businesses within Tulsa, Oklahoma. Meg and I would lose our minds if we had to know everything they did on top of what we already do. So whenever we heard about a local music video or venue that's in production right now and set to be open, they had a really hard time with their finances because it kept on, I think they started building around COVID. Costs kept on getting more and more expensive. So their financial plan has just continued to add in numbers. And we were able to talk to the economic development team and really find some grant opportunities for them that we didn't know of and they would have never known of. And we were able to write a letter of support from our office and really get those opportunities started for them. So now they're feeling way more confident about their future. They were able to get some things secured. And so now we're excited to have this venue open in our area that will fulfill a capacity that we're been needing for years. So being able to work on that side of things too is a huge opportunity for us, and we couldn't do it without our connections at the chamber.
I think that's really cool, and I think that part of what I'm very impressed with Tulsa is that not only do you have this like kind of hyper network where everybody who feels like they're responsible for the development of, you know, culture, arts, and economics is really also in an understanding that the city is scaling and growing, right? And so I think in one of our prior conversations, Meg, you were talking about how that's really something that stakeholders in the city have gotten behind, both private and government, is knowing that, you know, it's not, the city isn't just going to stay the size that it is. It wants to be an attractor to remote workers, to creatives. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that energy mentality in Tulsa that you see, you know, maybe on the city side, because I'd like to get into that private side and how you guys have partnered with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very unique kind of opportunity that we have here. We have families that help support a lot of the growth here in Tulsa. The George Kaiser Family Foundation is the one that started the Tulsa Remote Program. And so they'll pay you $10,000 if you to move to Tulsa. If you work in the tech industry and can work anywhere remotely, if you can, any job that, like, if you can choose a city to live in and work remotely, why not Tulsa? So they're encouraging people to come here and make that. And they've really invested in our city because they realize that we have an opportunity to guide our city in that growth and the way that we want to be. So a lot of the times you just kind of, the cities react to the growth. And this way we are kind of guiding to make this a larger community, but with the things that Tulsa needs rather than just another city. And so the support of the George Kaiser Family Foundation has definitely helped. We also have families that take pride in our downtown and our historic buildings. We have a large collection of Art Deco buildings. So the Price family has really taken charge and really trying to keep those restored and to what they were and making sure that they don't disappear. So it's a unique opportunity for community for sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I'm sorry, Natalie, were you going to say something?
Oh, I just wanted to give a shout out to the Tulsa Remote Program. They just got their 3,000th member go through. So that's 3,000 people that have moved to Tulsa. And I believe the percentage is like around 60 to 70% of them have gotten a home and chosen to stay. So really incredible stats there.
And through that also, there's been other opportunities. Like they've brought NYU that's opening a campus here in the spring of 2025. So that also brings recognition to Tulsa and will also give people in the Midwest an opportunity to take those NYU classes too.
And that's really cool. And I think, you know, that having the ability to bring in those remote workers and kind of diversify your industry, you know, base in that way is pretty cool. And I think that, you know, going back to your comments on how you have these families who are participating, that's something rather unique. And I know, Meg, you've worked in a few different city spaces. So could you kind of maybe showcase, like share why it is such a unique position, how the city bolsters and encourages that kind of family investment in the city?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's like, first of all, you need your people to love your city and create new opportunities. You know, I know that coming from the Dallas area, Dallas is very big in philanthropy and gives back to the community. So when I saw that Tulsa was very similar in giving back, I just felt at home. A lot of cities struggle with being able to have the money in order to keep up with everything in a changing situation and keep it very vibrant and keeping people wanting to come here. These private families help create those experiences. The park that I was talking about that I love so much was created by the Kaiser Family Foundation. So, you know, those opportunities wouldn't be possible without that support.
So are those parks, like the ones that you were just describing, is that, do the families kind of pay to create it and then hand it over to the municipality to maintain, or are they also maintained by those foundations?
They are also maintained by those foundations, which is a bit unique. I know a lot of cities, like they may have a park donated to them, but then they have the responsibility of taking over and making sure it's maintained and programmed and all that kind of stuff. So this family foundation actually takes care of all of that. So it's pretty cool. I mean, it's Tulsans really take pride in their city. And a lot of people don't understand what Tulsa is until they get here. They have a preconceived notion about what it is. Once they get here, they're like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest city ever. And I'm very fortunate that I was offered a position here and moved here. I love it here.
That's awesome. And I think that one of the more unique things that you guys are doing, and I'm so glad that they brought you in to continue to help, you know, find and empower the Natalies of the world. Because Natalie, you've been working on this really cool project to help shout from the rooftops, you know, what has been going on at Tulsa, but in a very unique way. You've been kind of activating your music scene, both locally in Tulsa, and I'd love for you to maybe touch on that, and also taking those musicians and turning them into ambassadors. So can you quickly talk about like what you've been doing locally in Tulsa to embolden that music community? And then, well, I want to jump into this whole ambassador thing, because I think it's the coolest thing since sliced bread.
So do you want me to talk about the ambassador thing or talk about other things and then we'll talk about the ambassador?
Leading into the ambassador thing, if you could talk about like what you do for musicians in the city, and then you take what you've done for them and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. So yeah, we are the Tulsa Office of Film, Music, Arts and Culture, and of course the M in FMAC is for music. So our office works to create and foster opportunities within our musicians and our community and our music scene, and really figure out what their needs are and how to make sure that they are getting everything they need to be successful based out of Tulsa. So we do all sorts of things, from a free musician photo shoot to a new program we just launched called Tulsa on Tour. And historically, we've done a lot of other things for musicians. So we are designing funds and grant opportunities based off what we sense the needs are for the community at the point of time that we're in.
Can you give me an example of you can even name a band if you want, but can you take up the musician and say, okay, here's what we've done locally to support them and provide them the opportunities for both for exposure in the city, and then we'll jump into what you do for them outside the city.
Yeah, so one of a notable band from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean, I think all of them are terrific, but Will Dorado has been very successful and are continuing to grow in their career paths. And they are a band that we took to Tulsa at South by Southwest with us in the past. So they were our headliner in 2023, and packed the house, but even had the other roofs of the neighboring venues filled with people or people climbing trees to be able to hear this event. They're a band that we recently were able to award with our new program. There are bands like Cliff Diver, and they are a pop punk elevator rock, like all kinds of different genre categories are out there now, but they're a band that we were able to help support through our creative content fund that happened a while back. I think they got some support through our live music fund that we had a while back, and their creative content fund, they were able to get different videos made for social media, as well as clips done for a documentary that they are in the works of still. And then they also are able to get our new program as well. So it's all of these musicians and so many different areas in their career or different genres that we're able to support with our different programming we do.
Cool. So let's talk about that thing that you've alluded to a bunch. So this ambassador program, which is really cool. So what do you do with these artists? What is this grant that you're talking about? And how do you, I guess, both Natalie, you and you, Meg, see this being a tool for kind of expanding the vision of what Tulsa is to the rest of the country?
Absolutely. So it's a new program called Tulsa on Tour, an ambassador program powered by the Tulsa Office of Film, Music, Arts and Culture. And this is really a partnership, kind of like a letter of love from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we're partnering with our organization is providing the checks. So that is what most of the artists are really, really holding on to. But we have so many great collaborations in this program as well. So there's a merchandise company, Low Road Merch, based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, that's managed by an past band manager / venue owner who knows the music scene like the back of his hand. And He is working with us to help with a discount of up to $250 on orders of $500, where musicians are able to get, say, enough merch to be able to sell that merch for $1,200 at a show, and they can get all that for only $250. So we're really helping musicians be educated and have everything they need whenever they go on tour, so they're making as much money as possible whenever they're on the road. Another example of something we're doing is kind of an ambassador program with our different attractions in town. So places like the aquarium or the Philbrook, which is an absolutely stunning art museum we have in town. Those groups have said, okay, for your ambassadors that are granted through this program, we want them to have free admission to our attractions so they're able to understand the value of the city that they're promoting on the road. So really this program is us being able to offset really just a small cost of the overall touring expenses, but it ranges from $250 grants to $1,000 grants based off certain qualifications. And we're able to give these along with these other special discounts or free tickets or whatever it may be to these musicians. And in return, we just tell them, claim Tulsa, Oklahoma on your social media and claim it while you're on the road and tell people about the city that you're coming from, because it's a city that supports you and that wants to really champion it being known as a city that has hip hop, that has country, that has folk, that has Americana, rock, indie pop, all kinds of stuff. We just really want Tulsa to be known as a place that really amazing talent is coming from.
That's really cool. So if I got this right, you're taking these people and you are basically building in the capacity within these musicians to be the best representatives and be the best. They could become local tour guides, really, at the end of the day, if they wanted to, of all the local assets that you guys have available.
Absolutely. And the thing about this that's so fun is a lot of these musicians are already touring. So we're really just taking advantage of this promotion opportunity to engage their fans from across the world, but also to support them. Because I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a post from a band that's going on tour that's like, oh my gosh, my van broke down, another expense, or trying to find a place to stay for the night. And this is our fun to say, okay, we see that you're already promoting Tulsa and we just want to be able to have this way to support you to avoid extra stress whenever those problems arise.
That's very interesting. How do you claim, like, how do you know that Tulsa's their home? Like, how does that qualify work? I'm very curious on like the structural side.
Yeah, I mean, really a Tulsa address. I mean, to be able to pay them, we need different accounting documents that has the address on there. So that kind of solidifies it up a bunch. But a lot of these musicians, I mean, a part of our roles in the FMAC office is to have a pulse on the heartbeat of Tulsa's creative industries. So most of the people that are applying, we're already familiar with. And if we aren't familiar with them, it's not too hard to research or ask a friend and make sure it's legit.
Fair enough.
And yeah. One of the other things is that, you know, this isn't just the city of Tulsa, it's our region, because we have such a vibrant music scene throughout this whole region. And there's so many different genres. So we just really want to celebrate what we have here and become known as a music city that people want to come and visit.
And I think that's beautiful. I think that in part, you guys are also doing a lot of things to bring people to Tulsa to experience that music as well, right? So it's not just an external work. You're also providing opportunities for locals to experience those same musicians. Is it currently, as we are recording this right now, this is currently Tulsa Music Month, is it not?
It is. Yes. Yeah. So we have identified July as Tulsa Music Month and supporting all things, you know, music. Natalie has done a great job with this and building out a webpage that has all kinds of music resources and events and just encouraging people to get out there and listen to live music, support our live music, as well as go enjoy our museums that we have here that are music related. Go and see the church studio if you have not. It's been very well received. We even were approached by the Downtown Association to do a concert series or a music series that is in parking garages. So it's hot, you know, here in July. So they wanted to do a music series in parking garages so they would give an opportunity to see live music and still be outside like all of us love to do, but a little bit cooler atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add to that. You can, it's fascinating. You can talk to any recording industry professional anybody that works at a record label or a manager. And if you ask them, like, hey, how do I build my career as a musician, or how do I get on the map, or even like get noticed by like Spotify for editorial playlists, and just every single person will tell you, you need to champion your hometown, because all of the metrics, all of the businesses, that's what they're looking at, is if you can't champion your hometown, then like, how will you get anywhere else? And so we're looking at that as like, yeah, our musicians need to be championed by their hometown. They're great. So that's why we're focusing so much on the people that live in Tulsa, Oklahoma too, to support the artists that are working and living and creating here and performing. I mean, there's music 7 nights a week, 365 days a year. So it's not hard to go support live musicians out of Tulsa. So we're encouraging just the locals to support their musicians in any way possible, whether that's following them on social media, their streaming services, adding the playlists, going to shows. There's so many different ways to support musicians.
And we also, I mean, our office really encourages and tries to help with making these full-time musicians, and that they're not having to take a part-time job. Also in our film world, we want to make sure that everybody's working here locally on films and bringing in those opportunities as well, because we want them to have a full-time job doing what they're wanting to do and not have to take a survival job on the side. So by really promoting what we have here in Tulsa, we've seen an increase of opportunities for both our film and music office or professionals. Matter of fact, we just kind of went through and reviewed what we had as far as on the film side of projects that we're filming here. And this was a tough year for Hollywood, but we had an increase of 48% of projects that were looking or reached out to Tulsa, and most of them did film or are planning on still filming in Tulsa. So we are being recognized, and so we have to just continue on this momentum. And it's going to happen for all of us, that we're getting there. People are noticing us.
And that's really cool. And I think that part of the, you know, Hollywood may have suffered, but Tulsa seems like it has been taking advantage of that shift in the marketplace. And it's interesting because our podcast is really about, you know, those creating those vibrant spaces. But it sounds like Tulsa really, just with the 7 days a week music opportunities to enjoy and, you know, be a part of that community, really has kind of figured out that the way that you guys are doing placemaking is via that music scene. And that's how you're, you know, imbuing vibrancy into old buildings and partnering with families to do these renovations, to create new studios. That's how you're doing historical preservation. It's such a unique, you know, lens to take on this thing that cities around the country are struggling with.
I think that's great. And I think, I mean, our film industry too has so much to do with that. We're getting so much international attention, really, from films that were filmed here decades ago, like The Outsiders, that now has its Outsiders musical Broadway debut that just won Best Musical at the Tonys, to amazing local filmmakers that are championing the city, like Sterling Harjo and Reservation Dogs, and he's working on a new pilot. So we're very fortunate that so many of our creative industries are thriving, and we don't have to favor one.
Absolutely. And we've had even companies from Los Angeles relocate to Tulsa because they have either made a project in Oklahoma or had lived in Oklahoma, not necessarily in Tulsa, but they loved the vibe of Tulsa that they decided to relocate here. So we continuously have indie productions going here, as well as, you know, the Killers of the Flower Moon, Twisters just came out. Although it was not filmed the majority in our area, we did have cities like Pawhuska and Bartlesville that were a part of it. And so we are just like so proud of how we're being identified as a film, you know, mecca as well.
So actually that leads into a my next, you know, question as we kind of head towards the end of this podcast here is like, in the last 5 years, what do you think that new belief or behavior or habit, you know, might have been or that is that has really developed this draw for people to come to Tulsa? What have you guys been, you know, what is communally, culturally that piece? Can you enlighten us?
I will say, like, on the film side, people like having heroes like Sterling Harjo here has helped really train a lot of our local crew. He has really been identified as a major filmmaker here, and he has been actually, he has a first look deal with FX, and FX said that they don't normally go on location for filmmakers. Filmmakers usually go on location for them. And so to have somebody of that caliber to really be a champion for us has helped us tremendously and put us on the map. And that has just continued. You know, with COVID, we had a lot of people that were looking for a place that they could go that would be a little bit more open, that they're not stuck in a studio, and being able to just really kind of shift and navigate. Oklahoma was one of the first that opened for film production. And so people are like, well, what's going on in Oklahoma? So as odd as it sounds, yeah, COVID kind of helped us too. But for the most part, we just have a lot of local film heroes that have really believed in our local industry and really built it up. And we're seeing people even coming from Texas. I saw the momentum and thought it was, you know, we were watching Oklahoma when I was in Texas for sure. And then to get this opportunity to help with that momentum to keep going was just kind of like a no-brainer to me. So I think that just people see what's going on here and they want to be a part of it. And once they get here, they're like, it's just a friendly city. It's very supportive. And they encourage, you know, growth here in our industries. I don't know, Natalie, you can probably speak more to the music part too.
Yeah, in the next 5 years, I just want to see a continued momentum around what foundation that we've been laying out and several others have been supporting with. I think we're really hoping to see several of our musicians be able to continue to grow and approach full-time career status. And with that, we want to see the momentum around Tulsa attract different music industry companies to maybe make a base in Tulsa. So we see a lot of the major talent agencies or record labels, maybe they have satellite locations in Dallas or Austin, and we're like, let's do Tulsa too in the next 5 years. So that always comes with the support of our musicians as well. And we're just continuing to build on the momentum and excitement of Tulsa, but also make sure that we're taking care of our community and doing it smart. So,
yeah. And we're partnering with several different people in order to help identify what infrastructure we need and how we can go about doing it. We talked to the mayor's office quite a bit about what city property is available and how can we use it to grow this industry, even if it's temporary, until we get more permanent structures here. So anything from some of these buildings being used as production office space to like identifying places that we could put a soundstage. So our community is all in, and it's great. I can just see it just continue. And in 5 years, have that soundstage, have those big productions that want to come here, not only because the story was taking place here, but because they know that Oklahoma can handle whatever is thrown at us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Okay, so to close out here, guys, we've talked about, you know, what you guys have been doing to empower, you know, your local musicians, and you're sending them out into the world to find, to take advantage of building their careers and having Tulsa as that base, and talked about how you like partner with private and family foundations to continue to grow outside of what the city is capable of building themselves, as far as renovating infrastructure, taking advantage of some of these old spaces and these historical spaces and preserving them and also turning them into something really functional, which is kind of building out those places for your musicians to play in. I think the biggest question I have for kind of the both of you after this phenomenal podcast is what is something that you would recommend to a city who is maybe just beginning on this journey of saying, wow, we're inspired by Tulsa. We want to kind of do what Tulsa is doing. How might you recommend they begin that journey to, embody what you guys have embodied?
I would do your research, first of all, of like, what type of city do you want to become? What do you really want to embark on? Then find those cities that are doing it well. Talk to their film commissions, their music office, their arts commission, see how they're building that structure, but also talk to your local community. One of the things that we did initially when Nellie and I both started in this office is we reached out to those people that are making a difference here that are looking to expand what they're doing here and asking them, what do they want to see from our office and how can we help, rather than also just thinking that you know what a city wants. Do your research and just really, really dive into your local community and ask your fellow other cities in your state or even outside your state. We have a cohort that we talk to all the time in the music world. We have film commissions that we talk to all the time, and ask them, what did you do in this situation? So the more that you educate yourself and just really learn what your local community wants, it'll happen. You can make it happen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what Meg said. She was right on the target. And I'll just further emphasize getting to know your community. I mean, this is a community of artists, musicians, filmmakers. Like, they have probably been hurt before, probably been told that they're going to be supported in one way and then maybe asked to pay for that kind of support. I know our community needed to build some trust around what our goal was and where our heart was at in terms of how we wanted to support them and that we genuinely cared about what they needed. So I think building trust with your community is just the most important thing.
Yeah, bringing that all the way back in a full closed circle to believe in yourself and your community believes in you. You've done a great job of that. So thank you for joining us today. And I can't wait to continue to see what Tulsa is as it does in the next 5 years as you guys build forward. So thank you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Man, I'm so sad that I missed being a part of that conversation.
Yeah, it was a really good one, but I bet it leads you to having a bunch of different questions, which I'm excited about.
And yeah, it really does. It really does. And I mean, I knew that it would be a really good conversation because like we met them at South By, we met them at Tulsa House. They'd hired one of those wonderful houses on Rainy Street and it was pumping the entire South By that it was live. It was the place that people went to hang out. The music was
amazing. And it was all those local artists they brought in from Tulsa to emphasize mm-hmm. their point of their development that made it really fun. And it was all of the people who were fans of those artists, obviously, even locally, just piling into that space. It wasn't just South By people, it was fans. And I think that that speaks to it's working. Like what Meg and Natalie are doing is actively working, and that's really cool.
And they also were, they were the reason we did like the little meet cutes from season one, where we met a bunch of the mayors who put us onto a bunch of the people for season one interviews, right? So Meg, Natalie, thank you. You're basically half the reason why season one happened. So
you rock.
Yeah, you rock. And yeah. I am obsessed, absolutely obsessed with their artists as ambassadors program.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me what your thoughts on that were, because you got to listen to it.
I did. Yeah. Like it's the idea of taking this kind of civic value that your people are the best mouthpiece to tell people about your city. Right. And I think that they're also acknowledging a little bit that a lot of the time we're not tourists in our own city. And so they're providing tickets for those artists to go to the aquarium and to visit all of the touristy spots that you would normally speak to people about. But then obviously they're also going and doing gigs within their own communities. They're doing the festivals within their own communities. They're doing Tulsa Month. Like, so they're doing all of these things. They've become these like mini influencers in a way, but not through social media, through music, right? And so they have obviously the tour fund where they are like, no, we want you to go away from Tulsa, become super famous, but stay mm-hmm. here, and we're going to make it worth your while to stay here and to tell people how awesome being here is, right? And it's like, it's not just pretty language, it's like a reframing of who tells a city's narrative, which is the people that tours the world. You know, it's Australians tell a narrative of Australia by traveling around the world. And like, and so that acknowledgement that musicians are going to tour, but they need a home base, right? And I think that that's wonderful. Like it is such a smart idea to look at what are you known for, build up that industry, and then have those people talk, like give them money to go do the thing that they're going to do naturally and then talk about you. Like, so incredibly smart. What a great way to turn artists into like economic developers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think by intention, right? Mm-hmm. And so like they're intentionally looking at the list of everything that an artist needs to do to be successful. One of those things being that like hometown, like celebration, like, can you celebrate where you're from? Or do you know it? Like they look basically, Meg and Natalie and their team have looked at that checklist of like, this is how we get our artists to be nationally recognized on these lists, et cetera, because that's ultimately what they want. That economic development is they want for Tulsa to be the place where music comes from, to draw people in. They want to follow that Nashville model. They want to really build themselves out. And I think that part of what they're doing to fast track that is really interesting, bringing in those private partnerships. Now, I know you kind of have some thoughts on private partnerships, but to me, it's what's very unique that, and I think Meg named this in the episode, it's how it wasn't just like that a local wealthy family purchased a park and gave it to the city, or purchased a theater and said, hey, now you can use this for whatever. They're actively involved in the maintenance and the placemaking of those spaces.
Right? But programming as well, maintenance and programming. Like they understand that you can't just hand an asset over and then be like, hey, we're so great, we named something after ourselves. Bye.
Right. They're like, hey, we're so great, we named something after ourselves, and now we're going to be here. We're going to be, it kind of reminds me a bit of that like medieval patron model of like roving bands of like artists and performers that like kept the peasantry at bay, with like the barons being, or the landowners being the ones to like sponsor them and give them a writ to perform, right? So it feels very much like a bit like, let's look at this old model, give it a modern twist, bring it into the 21st century, and let's play with it. And I feel like that's something exciting that I see that Tulsa is doing that not everybody else is doing in our current geopolitical environment. It may make them more sustainable.
Yes, I think so. Geopolitics, government funding being pulled, like you can't tell private people what to do with their money, right? Like that's why nonprofit institutes cultivate the philanthropy that they do. They cultivate the, like there's a whole people's jobs is just to schmooze the really wealthy people and get them, you know, committed to arts or blank or blank or blank or blank. And I think that what's different here, because a lot of the time patrons were about a particular artist. It was about a specific artist or a specific artwork, but these people are patrons of the city. So like this city is known as an artistic city, but it is their pride in the city spaces, the city vibrancy, the people that, and so they are being a patron, yes, of the arts, but they are being a patron of the economy. They are being a patron of the place that they live. And they're like, oh, you know, the nice places are not just my backyard where I can curate my lovely garden, but it is also all of the places where I socialize, which would be in town, right? And so I love the fact that they're like, city municipal funding is not going to stop us. State funding is not going to stop us, or the lack of federal funding, or the need for grants from the, you know, the National Arts Endowment Fund, and which is, you know, also controlled by the administration to great default anyway. But like, we are invested and that is enough, right? And so I see the positives of that in a stabilization.
However, what comes after that comma, Em? Tell us what comes after the comma.
Individuals, in general, particularly across generations, are not all the same, right? And so in the way that like institutions have processes and they have, you know, they had DEI processes for a reason, is to like have the way to like equitably give out funding, all of those kind of things. You are at the whims of a particular personality who has put money into said fund, right? And so that person may have blank or blank thing that happens in their life that changes their priorities. And so they don't put the funding in the next year, right? Or they die, old man Joe dies, and the kids are not as involved in civic pride as old man Joe, and like, and then all of a sudden that funding is pulled. And so like, I love the public private partnerships, but I also acknowledge that like, be careful about the hand that feeds you, the eggs all in one basket, like.
Right. Be careful of the children not living in Tulsa and not being committed to the city. Right. When that wealth gets transferred. Yeah. 100%. I think I hear that. And I think it's a really valid risk factor long-term to think about. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause they are definitely in a short-term more stable, more successful. They will be able to outcompete maybe even larger cities because of how agile they're able to be with.
And I know that the fund was the Keisler. Was it the Keisler Fund? The funds, those types of funds are set up to like have small investments that continue to generate the wealth. And so it's like a body of money that is like administered for that particular asset. And so it's clear that they're setting up those kind of things to protect it, generates its own wealth, which then goes into the maintenance, and like smart, right?
Well, I mean, and that's it. I guess that speaks again to the value of driving that cultural change and the value of driving the community investing back into itself, right? And so I think part of this is that the this whole arts, culture, music, and the last thing that film, that the film, of course, film, hello, everything that film is done. Gosh, my brain. So like, but the idea that like all of that lives underneath, as well as economic development, lives underneath this chamber of commerce, which is privately directed. So I think that part of it is, if you can get your local wealth redistributed back into the community, and they change the culture so that the culture changes to being investing into the community, overseen by the chamber of commerce, like you've got the structure is set up for that long-term success to mitigate some of those risks, I think.
Yeah. And again, I think that that's like a little bit in the whole touring fund and the whole ambassador fund, because if any of these musicians make it big, Taylor Swift style, they're bringing it back. Right. And they didn't need to be in Nashville or New York or LA to be that success, because their hometown invested in that success. Right.
Right. And I think that they're looking to at how, like, what national and global trends, like you were mentioning a little bit earlier, with how Australia is viewed and how musicians view themselves and how they build their own careers. They're really taking advantage of other things that are going on. So like in COVID, she talks about how they took advantage of the fact that they were able to open their film offices earlier than California was. And so they were able to take advantage of that opportunity to drive economics to Tulsa. And then they're also taking advantage of the growing trend of remote work, right? I think Meg explicitly says, you know, if you can work from anywhere, why not work from here? We'll give you $10K to move here. Also, our housing is more affordable. Also, like, invest in the community, anchor yourself here. And so as
they care about the community, they're investing in the community, like,
and they're taking advantage of it's not like they're just focused solely on Tulsa. They're saying Tulsa is a part of an ecosystem. Where can we be the aggressive predator? Where do we need to anchor and root ourselves, right, in this space? How do we get movement flowing in and about this ecosystem, knowing as Tulsa needs to become a growing hub for film and music and arts and culture? So, like, I think that the way that they've structured themselves is going to be interesting to watch unfold, especially in our current
using economic development and private money to protect the arts and culture funding, correct, so that it is not revoked by changing of administrations and all of those kind of things. It might be revoked by, as we say, the transfer of wealth generationally, depending on who your donors are, but
you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think that the system wasn't designed for this. They didn't design the system for our current geopolitical space, but I think that they did design the system with the fact that Oklahoma doesn't invest a ton of money into the arts and culture. And so they've honestly made themselves more resilient to our current economic, national economic problems, because they had to address a local economic problem that was potentially even more similar.
And the thing that I love is that this is not the only city this season that has protected its arts under economic development and has acknowledged that the arts is a massive economic development driver. But that's later in the season. We're not going to spoil it. But you can tell that Tim and I are proponents of protecting arts funding by couching it as making money, which it is.
And I think you're going to get to hear more about that next week with our amazing interview with Eric Souza, who was the president of this management authority in Midtown Baltimore. So
so we're going back to Baltimore, everybody.
Back to Baltimore, where it all began and where it will end and where it will regrow from. I'm excited. I'm excited about next week's episode so very much.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's what does it look like when a city uses public art to, like, shift real-time perceptions of safety and belonging and to take infrastructure that divided communities and now uses it as a connector for those communities, which I love. Absolutely. So be excited about next episode. It's going to be great.
That'll be great. And...
But until then, we hope that you're staying safe, that your city is healthy, and that you have wonderful adventures.
Yeah, and we encourage you guys to get out and get involved. Get out and get involved in the arts and cultural activities of your community, because that's how we maintain them and keep them around. So,
particularly if you have a lot of money and you're not seeing your city do what you want it to do, maybe you could be the one that makes that happen. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Awesome. I think one of the things I'm most excited about with Baltimore this next week is that they have really done the physical infrastructure in such a way that allows that evergreen experience to be present. Kind of not so much in the same way that, like, in this week in Tulsa, they do a great job of, like, reaching out, but, like, there's no snail trail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it's an amazing program. They're really using their assets very wisely. But you're right, it is transient. It follows the tour. And so, yes, you're hitting a bunch of people. You're talking very positively about Tulsa. Maybe that musician will come back multiple times to the same cities and talk positively about Tulsa. But that's, like, a really long game, right? You could be taking the things that they're doing and you could make that evergreen, right? You could leave like a trail of Tulsa musicians in all of the major cities, where you could have, like, digital mixtapes that overlay a city that maybe align with different locations you have in Tulsa, an aquarium, a park, whatever, you know, a festival space, whatever that might be. And you could be like, hey, while you're enjoying this festival, check out these Tulsa musicians who have visited here multiple times, who you've listened to, and, like, and take it in. And so you could not only be getting them to do the tour, but they could be leaving digital nuggets behind for people to find, right? Like that's, I mean, like, that's what I get really excited about as Story City, because we often will partner with these cities who have done the groundwork that Meg and Natalie are describing, but they don't yet have the infrastructure to scale that to be a passive addition that's a layer upon layer addition, right? So yes, you need the live stuff like the event, but you also need that in-between passive stuff as well. And I think that will be their next step. And with Baltimore, they have this beautiful infrastructure built, and so they've kind of come at it from a different angle, but that's also an additional step that, you know, they're looking to take.
Yeah, you know, kind of riffing off of something you just shared, we often say that, like, this Vibrant Spaces podcast is like our Batman gig, right? And that our Bruce Wayne job is the Story City piece that allows us to get paid to have this fun Batman gig. I think that as you were talking, my story as a deep brain started to go like, well, one of the things we're really good at is the choose your own adventures. And if you're able to do like busking trails with choose your adventures, where you, I would, if I was Meg or Natalie, I would just go and film artists performing in front of the aquarium. And then any city with an aquarium, like use the choose your adventure in such a way that, you know, you like, you generate your playlist based off of the destination. And so you could really mix, that mixtape could really be like overlaid over a city, so that you're not only promoting the artist, but you're promoting Tulsa, and you're allowing the end person who's experiencing this to make their decisions based off of their interests. And then that would draw them to Tulsa via their interests. I don't know. There's a lot of fun ways to play with that, because they are so focused on marketing and sharing out the experience of what it's like in Tulsa. I really think that, one of the things
take
I would
the assets to see you have. Them. Yep, take the assets you have, take them out of Tulsa. Social media is not the only place to do it. Like, experiences are core millennial and Gen Z traits right now.
Mm-hmm. And right? People want to be away from their doom scrolling, and it's a great way to engage mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what I'm really excited for you guys to see Baltimore next week, for us to revisit Baltimore next week. It's that, you know, use of public art to take physical infrastructure and change that perception of safety and belonging, and connect things that physical infrastructure has disconnected. Taking that component of making sure that physical place is in there, making sure those systems are in there, and then making sure that the digital is in there. Like, I think that's where that real sweet spot is. And so I'm excited for you guys to hear the next episode.
Same. See you guys next week, and get out and enjoy your local arts and culture.
Yes, because without it, it wouldn't continue to be funded, right? We need the numbers. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And if you are a private individual with a lot of moolah and your city's not doing what you want it to do, maybe you should take a leaf out of City of Tulsa's book.
Yeah, give Meg a call. She's probably more than happy to give you some advice.
Ciao.
See you next week.
The Vibrant Spaces podcast is produced by Story City. You can find our entire archive on any podcasting app and on about.storycity.app, where we publish transcripts and show notes. This episode was produced by Tim Souza, and our staff includes Justin Kahn, Brett Ludwig, and Victoria Umitska. Our theme song is Happy Indie by Alex Guz. Our co-hosts are Tim Souza and me, Emily Craven. As always, thank you for listening. We hope you have a glorious adventure this week.